Before our message this morning, I'd like just to take a breath and begin with gratitude. Gratitude for my dad. Gratitude for the invitation to stand in this spot where I played as a child imitating my parents. Gratitude for the unwavering faith and support from this congregation that has meant so much to me through the years, and I know to anyone who's grown up in this church. And just gratitude to be home in this space, in this community. Thank you. I'd like to move on to talking about one of my favorite things, math. When I worked as a middle school math teacher, year after year, I found that my students always seemed to be afraid of fractions. I know there's plenty of adults in this room who feel the same way. Fractions are uncomfortable. Give us whole numbers, a nice, clean, easy 1 or 2 or 10. But an important part of my job was teaching my students number sense. So I'd always find myself encouraging them, saying, fractions are just like regular numbers, they're just parts of a whole. Oddly enough, a lot of my students preferred working with decimals over fractions. And I'd have to keep reminding them that decimals and fractions are the same thing, right? I mean, if you have 1/5, it's the same as 0.2. You can add another fifth, you have 2/5, that's the same as 0.4. Add another 1/5, it gives you 3/5, it's the same as 0.6. And you can keep doing this until you get to 5/5, which is the same as 1 whole. Nice, clean, and easy. When I had a student I wanted to mess with, I would have them do this with thirds. See, thirds are not pretty. When you change them into decimals, it gets uncomfortable. 1/3 is equal to 0.33333333333333333333. It goes on and on repeating. There's an infinite number of threes after that decimal point. So I'd ask a student, well, if 1/3 is the same as 0.3 repeating, then what is 2/3 equal to? And they think about it and think about it, and they'd say, well, 0.333 plus another 0.333 gives you 0.666. So 2/3 is equal to 0.6 repeating. Great, I'd say. How about 3/3? Easy. Add another 0.333 and you get 0.999. So 3/3 must be equal to 0.9 repeating. Wait. I'd stop them. Shouldn't 3/3 be equal to 1 whole? And they'd think about it and think about it. And usually this conversation would end with the student stomping off, bruh, this doesn't make any sense. Here's the thing. I am a certified math teacher and I agree. Bruh, this does not make any sense. This issue with the thirds has always had me stumped as well. I know for a fact we have some math specialists in our congregation, so maybe they can explain it better than I. But whenever I try and research an explanation for this issue, the internet just ends up telling me, yeah, 0.99999 repeating is the same as 1 whole. Mind blown. I think it has something to do with the fact that any whole can be split up into infinitely many parts, right? This is hard for us to wrap our minds around because we live in a very concrete and finite world where if I have a block of cheese, there's a limit to how small I can cut those pieces. But if we think beyond the limits of matter and molecules and atoms and things we can touch, we could cut something into thousandths and millionths and billionths and so on. 0.99999 repeating is the same as one whole because you gotta take into account all those parts. And there are always more parts than we can even fathom. When we think about one whole, we just picture the number one, one digit. Nice, clean, and easy. We want it to be neatly wrapped up with a bow. When we picture a pie that is whole, we picture a whole pie that hasn't been cut into. When we think of a song that's whole, a whole song, we picture a melody from beginning to end, on key and uninterrupted. When we picture a person who is whole, well, then they must have it all together. But the fact that one whole is the same as 0.99999 repeating is just proof that wholeness is messier than we think. And wholeness can be infinite. In my very early days teaching math, I felt like I had found a sense of purpose that would bring me wholeness in my life. I felt so energized and committed to this calling to help close the opportunity gap in underserved school districts. It was a calling that shaped my entire sense of identity and every breath I took. After struggling in office jobs in my early 20s, this was the calling that was going to make me feel complete. I knew it would be hard, but I was going to work at it and work at it and work at it, and eventually I would be like that self-assured teacher they'd showed us in the teacher training videos. The one who knew what she was doing, whose classroom ran smoothly and was an oasis of empowered learning. The teacher whose students gave moving testimonials about their positive experiences. This was going to be the job that made me feel whole. This was going to bring me to a nice, clean, easy one. You can imagine my disappointment and deep shame when I burnt out very quickly. I ended up spending most of my time teaching in this intense tug of war between my love for my students and my feelings of inadequacy. It was a tug of war that ripped and tore at me, bringing me to some of my lowest of lows. This job and this purpose that was supposed to bring me wholeness actually had left me feeling broken. And I often still struggle to move past that. There was one time during my first year of teaching when I was having a particularly terrible day. It was right after Thanksgiving. The head math teacher who I had relied on so heavily, I mean, she planned the curriculum, she made the worksheets, she talked through lessons with me. She arrived early before school that morning, only to gather her things and resign. I remember feeling so blindsided and so incredibly lost and alone, frantically trying to wipe my tears away as I sharpened pencils before class, willing myself to get it together so my students would not see me cry. Then class began, and I had to teach. I was less than a minute into my lesson when one of my colleagues, one of my dearest friends, walked into the back of my classroom and just sat there. She was smiling the warmest, most loving smile at me, attentively listening to my lesson. She was a fellow first-year teacher who taught science. We had started at the same time together. We'd gone through training together. We'd spent time outside the classroom together, swapping stories about our students and our struggles and our vulnerabilities. We had cried in her car together. This was her prep period, her one break from the chaos of the day. But on that day, she chose to spend it with me in my classroom, knowing that I was having a hard time. and as her love and generosity and support washed over me, and I felt the deep wells of gratitude and love and appreciation fill up inside me, our hearts locked in on each other. And it felt in that moment like we were an extension of one another. Amidst all the feelings of brokenness and inadequacy, it was enough in that moment to make me feel whole. Now, this wasn't magic. This moment did not flip some sort of switch inside me that gave me the answers and fixed my problems. It did not make me feel like I had it all together, or even ever would. I wasn't at a nice, clean, easy one. But in that moment, I felt like someone truly saw me in all of my chips and my cracks and my crumbling pieces. And they gazed upon me with no judgment, only care, validating my brokenness, reminding me that I was worth caring for, that I was okay, that I was enough. It felt in that moment like I was somehow tapped into a holy, sacred, and abundant love beyond her and me. It gave me that feeling of that 0.99999 kind of wholeness, messy and infinite. So when I think about our story from our gospel reading in Luke today, I have a hunch that the Samaritan might have felt tapped into that same sacred, holy, and abundant love by the end of the passage. I invite us all to revel in the pure joy that was radiating from the healed Samaritan when he fell at Jesus' feet, joy and gratitude shining through the dust that was kicked up around his knees. The kind of joy and gratitude that extends through every limb and face and chest. The kind of joy and gratitude that would have been contagious as Jesus and the Samaritan's hearts locked in on each other and they became an extension of one another. The kind of joy and gratitude that might bring Jesus to laugh and celebrate with the Samaritan, recognizing the singularity of this experience he is having in this deep moment of healing. I mean, this is a story where everyone comes out a winner, right? 10 people are cured from disease. Yet this one man has this experience with Jesus that seems to go beyond a physical cure. The Samaritan, a man who had not only experienced the horrors of being an outcast due to leprosy, but who was also mistreated and cast away as a foreigner, an outcast on the margins. The cure of his leprosy would not fix his life. If he had followed Jesus' original instructions for the group to go to the temple to be declared clean by the priests so they could enter back into society, if he had followed those instructions, it's likely the priests would not have declared him clean anyway. He was a Samaritan, a foreigner, an outcast on the margins. Makes me wonder if he might have been feeling pretty broken. But these stories show us that even during times of our lives when we are hurting and feeling broken, feeling whole is possible. And our experiences of brokenness can make it feel even more profound. We can't feel or notice wholeness without honoring the parts of ourselves that have felt broken or incomplete, like those fractions we're all so uncomfortable with. And while this does not justify or glorify suffering, it does maybe uncover some hope. Hope for wholeness. Psychologist David G. Benner talks about this brokenness as the cracks that let the light in. I love that. The cracks that let the light in. When we, with our chips and our cracks and our crumbling bits, turn toward a radical and inclusive love, the kind of love that is sacred and infinite, We are letting the light in and opening ourselves up to the possibility of wholeness. The Samaritan turned toward it when he turned back toward Jesus' love. Maybe we turn toward it in one singular moment where our heart locks with someone else's. Maybe we turn toward it by entering into a community like this one where we can come as we are, carrying our chips and our cracks and our broken bits with us. Maybe we turn toward it by looking deep inside ourselves, greeting our truest, most authentic, vulnerable, and imperfect selves with warmth and care and compassion. However we turn toward it, as we do, we can discover the power of our light through the cracks, an infinite messy wholeness, 0.99999. You see, the thing about wholeness is that it's not something that can be earned or manufactured. The Samaritan wasn't better than his nine companions. He didn't have more credentials that we know of. Wholeness is not self-improvement or perfection. Confusing wholeness with perfection just leaves us feeling inadequate. We're never going to be at that nice, clean, easy one. Wholeness is a feeling that we bump up against through encounters with the holy. It's an experience of the sacred that can sneak up on us. And sometimes it can be fleeting, lasting only the length of a math class. What we can do, though, is we can embody that holy for others to encounter. By living out Jesus' call for radical, inclusive, and transformative love, letting that love shine out and through our chips and cracks and wear and tear, we can cultivate this profound wholeness in the world around us. By participating in that dynamism of love and loving others as parts of ourselves, we can experience an even bigger, infinite sense of whole. A joyful, infinite, messy wholeness that can grow and spread over and under and through and about and into those around us. And as it grows, we can in turn be made whole. May it be so, and amen.